Ohio universities. There are hundreds more moments of science on our website at amos.indiana.edu. To get podcasts, click on the podcast button. For A Moment of Science, I'm Yael Cassander.
In sports, with the NBA's regular season winding down, Golden State needs a win tonight at Phoenix to retain any hope of making it into the playoffs, and Indiana has to win at Washington to keep alive its slim chance for a postseason berth. The Bulls head to Milwaukee today to face their Central Division rivals at the Bradley Center. It's the final road game for the Bulls, who will miss the playoffs for the first time in four seasons. All-American Michael Beasley has scheduled a news conference for today on the Kansas State campus. He's expected to announce whether he'll return to school for his sophomore season or make himself available for the NBA draft. If he comes out, Beasley would certainly be a lottery pick and could conceivably go number one overall. The Oakland Athletics and Chicago White Sox have forgotten about last year's troubles heading into today's game in Chicago after 2 weeks each is on top of its division heading into the two-game set. Carlos Zambrano's hustle, not his pitching or bat, paid off in a rare appearance off the bench yesterday. A throwing error on Zambrano's grounder allowed Ronnie Cedeno to score the go-ahead run in the 10th inning as the Cubs beat the Philadelphia Phillies 6-5. The San Francisco Giants beat the St. Louis Cardinals 7-4 yesterday. And Trevor Immelman's third three-shot victory at the Masters vaulted him from 29th to 15th in the world golf rankings. He's the first South African in 30 years to win the first major championship of the Grand Slam season. That's a look at sports. It's 2:42. The next director of American Indian Studies at the University of Illinois says the debate over Chief Alinawek severely hampered the program in the past. Robert Warrior, currently a professor of English at the University of Oklahoma, says the retirement of the symbol brings a unique opportunity when he takes over the program this fall. He told AM580's Jeff Bossert that the change at the U of I led to him accepting the job.
Everything was about the chief, and this was the only thing that people wanted to talk about, and to the point really where I felt interrupted by at every stage of trying to talk about other sorts of things, which is always ironic to me, because people will say, why are you complaining? Why are we having this controversy over mascots? Shouldn't you be talking about other issues, about economic development, about providing better social services to American Indian communities? And that's what I was trying to do when I spoke when I spoke on campus back in 1992. And yet I couldn't do it because people only wanted to have this very polarizing discussion. So to be on campus 15 years later, and my interview happened, in fact, the weekend that the Board of Trustees came to their final vote, and saying that they embraced this decision, was certainly a big change. Having said that, this is not something that's over. I taught previously at Stanford, which in the early 1970s did away with its native-themed mascot. I taught there in the 1990s, and that issue was still very much around. It's just the important thing to me in deciding to come to Illinois was that the university was now on what I believe to be the right side of this issue. I think that that allows a program like American Indian Studies to do what it ought to be doing academically, intellectually, in a scholarly sense.
With this issue out of the way, what would you like to do in terms of allowing this department to thrive and expand its environment?
Well, one thing I just remembered recently was that U of I has been participating for the past almost half decade in a consortium of American Indian programs throughout the Big Ten, through the Committee on Institutional Cooperation that's based there in CU brings together faculty, students who do American Indian Studies across the Big Ten universities, also UIC and UofC. There are various conferences through the year that take place through that consortium, and Illinois has never been able to host one because of the chief. That the consortium made a decision, which was supported by people in American Indian Studies at Illinois, that as long as this issue remained on the table, it was not an appropriate place to hold a conference, essentially a boycott. Well, the boycott's over, and next spring we'll be hosting the main event. That's a real breath of fresh air. I think people are really energized and excited that, as opposed to bringing people in to speak in an embattled environment, it's a different kind of thing. I see things like that happening with increasing frequency.
We don't have many Native Americans now in Illinois compared to where you live. Talk about leaving a state like Oklahoma in terms of its Native American history.
Well, of course, Illinois has a very long history a very long indigenous history, and there are plenty of people still around who consider Illinois to be, you know, part of their traditional homelands. But you're right that in terms of the current scene, there are relatively few Native people in the state. But, you know, there are people all over, and Chicago has always been a really important meeting ground, even back into the 18th and 19th centuries for Native people. But more importantly, in the 20th and 21st century, it's one of the centers of urban Native population in the country. I think one of the things I'd like to see is a much stronger bridge between the Chicago American Indian community and U of I, talking about tens of thousands of American Indian people in Chicago. But the thing I always say, whether it's talking to people on campuses or in, you know, local communities, I say that there are always more American Indian people around than you think, and there are American Indian people on campus who are staff people and students, you know, who are already on campus, who may or may not be part of the American Indian community on campus already, but who are there. And oftentimes what we're fighting, I think, is just the small numbers, and the numbers never become necessarily large enough to become significant in some people's eyes, and yet they're almost everywhere you go, there's some sense of community that is already there or that can be, you know, that can be built.
AM 580's Jeff Bossert. He talked with University of Oklahoma English professor Robert Warrior. This fall, Warrior will become the director of the American Indian Studies Program and Native American House at the University of Illinois' Urbana campus. American Airlines says it doesn't anticipate problems today. Last week, the carrier canceled more than 3,000 flights due to a government safety crackdown. NPR's Allison Keyes reports.
The flights were canceled after the Federal Aviation Administration found wiring bundles were improperly wrapped and attached inside wheel wells on some of American's MD-80 jets. American had canceled some flights in late March due to the same problem and thought it had resolved the issue. But American Airlines spokesman Charlie Wilson says the fleet of 300 MD-80s has now been reinspected and the planes have been up and running since yesterday. Still, he urges customers to check on their flights just in case.
We would like customers to continue to check AA.com for their flight schedules, even though that's not an issue now. Please continue to do that. And for those who have been inconvenienced, we would appreciate if they would check with AA.com to see about how they can be reimbursed.
The airline is still dealing with a backlog of customers whose flights were canceled and couldn't find another way to get to their destinations. The FAA has been cracking down on airline compliance with safety issues after revelations of maintenance lapses at Southwest Airlines led to congressional hearings. Allison Keyes, NPR News, Washington.
For nearly a decade, Dora the Explorer has been a daily routine for millions of preschoolers and their families. The animated cartoon, which airs on Nickelodeon, is the most popular show for kids aged 2 to 5. Dora is a 7-year-old bilingual Latina who is a leader and a problem solver. NPR's Rolando Arrieta has more.
Sharon Bennett of Washington, D.C. says her TiVo is clogged with recorded episodes of Dora the Explorer. But for her and her 3-year-old, it's worth it.
The tiny frustrating thing is I don't speak Spanish, so I don't understand everything. Sometimes she'll ask me what a word might mean or not, and I might not know off the top of my head.
Hola, soy Dora.
And I'm Boots.
Where are you ever been to the beach?
Dora the Explorer debuted in the summer of 2000. Nickelodeon had already been successful with launching interactive-type programming for kids, so they asked producer Chris Gifford to create another one. He says there were many attempts to engineer the ideal character that would motivate kids to participate. They tried a squirrel, a marten. One promising idea was a bunny.
It was a bunny who would go on a trip with his mommy. But it wasn't a bunny for very long.
That's because his boss, Brown Johnson, was thinking of something altogether different. She said, throw the bunny and all the other animal ideas away and make the character a Spanish-speaking Latina. Johnson had gone to a conference about media, race, and gender, where she learned that Latinos were not well represented in children's television.
One of our goals with Dora was to position the whole idea of being multicultural as being super special.
The notion of multiculturalism didn't start with Dora. Sesame Street, for example, has had an ethnically diverse cast since the 1970s. Nickelodeon had plans for an animated show where kids would go on a make-believe journey. Chris Gifford says along the way they would face obstacles and learn strategies to overcome them.
Like stopping to think.
Let's stop and think.
Asking for help throughout the show.
Who do we ask for help when we don't know which way to go?
Preparing information, then using it strategically, like through the story, through the journey.
The map! The map! The map, that's right.
These were basic to the conception of the show from the beginning.
But they still had a lot of questions. What would this Latina character look like? What would she wear? So Gifford and Johnson asked for help.
We must have more consultants than any television show in the entire universe.
School teachers, sociologists, historians, cultural and language experts were all brought in to help. And mistakes were made, like when they came up with the character Tico, one of Dora's friends.
Tico was always sleepy and sort of asleep under a tree. And our cultural consultant said to us, not such a good idea, you know, to have the Latino character who only speaks Spanish, who's the littlest character, always asleep. It's like, just not a good idea.
Plus, that might have angered the Costa Ricans, who affectionately call themselves Ticos. And as for where she would come from, the creators and consultants decided she would not be from anywhere.
We framed her as more of a pan-Latino character, so that she could actually be a source of pride and identity for anyone of Latino background.
Carlos Cortez teaches history at the University of California in Riverside. He's author of Children Are Watching, How the Media Teach About Diversity. He says being pan-Latina also meant the writers needed to choose Spanish words carefully.
For example, make certain that the words that we were using were universal Spanish terms and not Spanish terms that were meant one thing in Cuba and something else in Mexico and something else in Peru.
Lo siento. No sabía que el bizcocho estaba en el escalón. Caballito says he's sorry. He didn't know your cake was on the step.
So after about a year and many iterations, a smart 7-year-old problem solver named Dora Marquez was born.
I need your help. Will you check my backpack to find something that will make the bucket slip off the big red chicken's foot? You have to say backpack.
And why the name Dora? The Spanish feminine word for explorer is exploradora. Her last name came from the acclaimed writer Gabriel Garcia Marquez. And when it came time to sketching the way she looked, she wasn't your stereotypical Latina.
Short hair, not long, flowing hair, a little more tomboyish, because it seemed like, you know, a girl who was more interested in adventure and play and exploring than someone who thought a lot about what she looked like.
Dora, Dora, Dora the Explorer!
Dora!
Gifford knew kids would like it. He and his team produced a pilot and showed it to a group of preschoolers.
Dora!
I mean, you know, the kids were just so crazy about it.
Splash! Bloosh! I'm pretending to swim. I'm Dora the Swimmer.
Gifford says preschoolers screen all Dora episodes before they air, and they could be really tough because they tell it like it is.
Oh, it's awful. It can be so scary. The 3-year-olds come at you and you're just petrified.
As a father, Gifford believes that Dora the Explorer is what all parents want their daughters to be.
Well, she's courageous. She's kind. She's got unbelievable interpersonal skills.
Some parents might also find her a little annoying, like when she encourages kids to yell.
Say abre! Louder! Abre!
And Dora never fails.
We did it!
Despite all that, Dora the Explorer just might be the first icon for the children of a new America that today is about 14% Latino and fast-growing. Rolando Arrieta, NPR News, Washington.
Earth and Sky.
Monday, April 14th, 2008. Around the world tonight, two shining points of light can be found near the waxing gibbous moon.
They're the planet Saturn and a star, Regulus, the brightest star in the constellation Leo the Lion. You can tell which object is Saturn and which is Regulus because Regulus is the closer body to the moon on Monday night.
Regulus and Saturn will appear to journey westward across your sky throughout the night tonight. The moon, star, and planet will set below your western horizon several hours after midnight Tuesday morning. The westward motions in our sky of the moon, Regulus, and Saturn are like the sun's westward motion during the day. Objects in the sky move toward the west because Earth spins continually to the east on its axis.
Every day, all heavenly bodies rise in the east and set in the west because of this spin of the Earth. If you were to watch the moon over the next few nights, though, you could detect the moon's own motion in space. You'd notice, for example, that the moon rises later each day. And you'd see the moon's position relative to the star Regulus and the planet Saturn shift from one night to the next.
That's because the moon's true motion in space carries the moon in the same direction Earth is spinning continually to the east. I'm Deborah Bird.
And I'm Joel Block for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Strawberry Fields in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields Catering Department offers box lunches for professional meetings or casual lunchtime gatherings. Delivery is available at 239-5632. Strawberry Fields also offers an in-store nutritionist.
It's 3 minutes before 3 o'clock Central Time. Well, we should be able to see that moon-star-planet combination tonight in Illinois and Indiana. The forecast tonight: mostly clear, lows ranging from 25 in northern Indiana to 34 in western Illinois. Freeze watches and warnings have been issued for tonight and tomorrow morning for central Indiana and southern sections of Illinois and Indiana. The outlook for tomorrow across the two states: mostly sunny, highs ranging from 57 in northeastern Indiana to 66 in western Illinois. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, look for clear skies, the low 30, the wind from the northeast at around 5 miles per hour, shifting to southerly overnight. Tomorrow, sunny, breezy, and milder, the high 63, the wind from the south at 6 to 12 miles per hour, increasing to 12 to 24 miles per hour during the afternoon. Tomorrow night, clear skies, the low 43. Wednesday, mostly sunny, windy, and warmer, the high near 70. Wednesday night, becoming partly cloudy, the low around 50. And the outlook for Thursday, partly to mostly cloudy, the high 72. Coming up tomorrow in the 1 o'clock hour of the afternoon magazine, we are going to talk about Diane Arbus and Hubert's Dime Museum and Flea Circus. That's part of what we'll talk about tomorrow in the 1 o'clock hour of the program. Hubert's Dime Museum and Flea Circus is a long-gone Times Square freak show. In the late 50s and early 60s, photographer Diane Arbus was a frequent visitor. A few years ago, a cache of previously unknown photos that Arbus made of Hubert's surfaced. So tomorrow on the afternoon magazine, we'll talk about Hubert's, Arbus, and the man who determined the photos were hers. Gregory Gibson will be our guest. He is the author of Hubert's Freaks, The Rare Book Dealer, The Times Square Talker, and The Lost Photos of Diane Arbus. Gregory Gibson will join us at 1:06 here on WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. Up next here on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu, it's The World from PRI. Stay tuned.